a few exciting guests coming on today, and Steve Pierce is going to be calling in about John Boehner and the what happens after Boehner, post Boehner, and I've supposedly have someone who's coming on to talk about local business, a grad student, and then we have Walt Rubel coming in as well. If you're a Packers fan, I think yesterday was a pretty good day for you. And Aaron Rodgers picking up where he left off, making his argument to be the great quarterback of his generation. And so it was Alex Smith, who's just apparently sold some sort of a Italian villa style residence in California. I guess he's not going back to San Francisco. San Francisco looks dreadful. Colin Kaepernick, who is actually a very smart guy, he had a 4.0 going through school, at least in high school. Colin Kaepernick is a four interceptions and I think something like 67 yards. So the careers of these two guys, even though Alex Smith has never really reached the heights up in Kansas City that he had before, has a much better career right now than Kaepernick. Here's a little bit with Aaron Rodgers.
You were already without Jordy Nelson. You lost Devontae Adams, Andrew Corliss tonight. What did you like about the way your other wide receivers played tonight?
Well, I mean, we're so blessed to have James Jones back. We've said it just about every week. But he's a touchdown machine. You know, he's a big play guy for us. I think he feels real comfortable here in Green Bay. So it's great to have him out there. The offensive line blocked great tonight. Gave me a lot of time. They got a great pass rush. They brought five a lot of times. Randall had a great game. You know, three touchdowns. The young guy, Ty, did a good job. Ran the ball pretty well. Defensively, we got to, you know, probably throw up a few things. But that's a good team win for us.
John Gruden has coached us up on this a lot, but are you surprised by how often your hard count still works getting the defense to jump?
I'm happy. I mean, it's nice, you know, when you get some opportunities down the field. But it's more about controlling the get-off, and it's a weapon at home that we use to slow down the rush a little bit if we can, and when they get a little jumpy, we have a chance to take a shot down the field.
He almost threw an interception. The streak was in jeopardy for like a split second. We saw you smiling. What were you thinking when the ball left your hand?
Well, I didn't see him. It's one of those ones you don't see him. I'm just glad he dropped it. I appreciate that. But, you know, it's a good job by our offense. You know, we took care of the football again. Defense got us, you know, a turnover. And it's a good team win for us at home.
But you have said that there is something different about playing here and the rhythm that you're able to get into on your home field. What is that?
Well, it's the crowd. We got a great crowd. It's the opportunity for me to use my cadence. It's the easy checks that we have. We can go, you know, some audible stuff without doing a lot of hand signals. That's a big advantage for us.
Aaron Rodgers there. And so they're calling his performance last night a 5-touchdown masterpiece. So it does apparently does not matter what receivers Jordy Nelson has, because he lost his top couple of receivers. And Aaron Rodgers. Or Aaron Rodgers lost Jordy Nelson, who was arguably the best deep threat in the game. And, you know, what can you say? It's just, you know, the Packers are going to be a force this year, and you can't be surprised to see them if they show up in the Super Bowl, but especially with the Seahawks struggling a little bit. Okay, so Steve Pierce is supposed to be calling in a few minutes. We've got John and Theory headed down here and to talk about his knowledge, his study, his experience on economics. We're trying to get some momentum going in this town, some kind of a, you know, something special going on. Instead of having thousands of empty buildings, it would be great to have people fighting over the few empty buildings that we have. And here's, we have a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Yeah, it's Steve Pierce. How you doing?
Steve, great. Just telling folks you're going to be coming in. For better or worse, John Boehner is no longer in the mix.
He is not in the mix. He is, I think, graciously stepping down.
Was this a long time coming in terms of the fight behind the scenes?
Well, you saw 3 years ago, 8 of us voted against him, and there were quiet retaliations then. Anytime you start retaliating in politics, especially in the Republican Party, not good things happen. The Democrats always play a really structured game. The Nancy Pelosi just had complete control of every vote, and if you didn't vote with her, she simply primaried, you got you out. So most of the blue dogs got beat by other Democrats. But it works differently in our group, and so 8 of us voted expressing opinion that the speaker was not doing a really good job, and that's about as complex as my vote was. Just we needed somebody to throw fastballs. The opposition to his style just kept building. There is general consensus that he was still fighting like it was 1994. That's when he came in. He came in a big wave back there that took over the House for the first time, I think, in 40 or 70 years or something. So he was still fighting there, and Obama is not following the law. He's not following tradition, not following the Constitution. And yeah, Mr. Boehner had this idea that, well, we've got to play within certain rules, and it just wasn't working against this president. So that, in that sense, it was a fairly long term coming. Basically, I don't think there was going to be any action this month or next month. I think that he just saw that he was in an untenable position and just decided to go to keep the friction down, and so it was a very gracious decision at the end.
Was it your sense that it was influenced by Pope Francis?
I don't think so. I think it was more influenced by the House Freedom Caucus that was beginning to say, look, we just can't keep telling America we're going to do one thing while we do a different thing. We told Americans we're going to balance a budget. We told them we're going to defund Planned Parenthood, whatever it is that we're telling them, behind the closed doors up here, we're doing something different. And so the Freedom Caucus is basically saying, let's get honest with the American people. Again, a fairly simple communication. The speaker could see that the resolve had set in. And so I don't think it had much to do with Pope Francis. It was this group, and he had called a group of men the day before Pope Francis was here, said, can we all get together on this? And I said, we can get together if you start moving toward a balanced budget. So anyway, he could see there was not going to be much give in the principles that we run on.
Well, Steve, let me ask you, as you're saying that John Boehner's style was not classically conservative, he wasn't a constitutionalist, but did Boehner allow people to say, or did he ratify people saying in public, we're going to fight against Obamacare, we're going to fight for a balanced budget, and then behind the scenes he would say, this is actually not what we're going to do?
He would never use the words, just the votes would never come. In other words, we were going to fight. You remember last year we passed the Cromnibus, and his comment was, let's approve all of the budget except we'll have a continuing resolution on the Homeland Security, and we're going to test whether or not the president has the right to do what he's doing with people who are here illegally. You'd be on either side of the question, but the president had stepped way beyond his balance. He had said the things he had said multiple times, the things that he was in the process of doing were simply illegal. He had said that back in the last 3 years, 4 years. And then began to do what he said he couldn't do before. So the speaker said, we're going to take that fight on. Take all the other fights off the table, and this is the fight. We're going to fight to the death. We got up here, and we didn't fight to the death at all. And there were those that were saying, wait, sir, you said we're going to fight to the death. Where is this? You just roll over. And so it wasn't so much that behind the scenes he would say it differently. Behind the scenes he would do differently.
Well, that's got to be discouraging.
Yeah, and that's very hard to distinguish. In other words, you get in the flow of the game. Let's say you're at a football game. You're one of the players on the field of a football game, and the coach says, all right, we're going to have a running game, and we're going to run and pound that line. And then he gets in the game, and he throws nothing but passes. Well, you don't really realize until you sit down and look at the statistics till later saying, wait, we didn't run but 6 running plays. We were going to run 26. And so it's the same thing up here. You got the fights going on every day, and you're out working on this issue and that issue. And then you look up and say, wait, we were going to fight to the death on this. What happened to that? So after a while, then it starts sinking in that we're doing something different than we say we're doing.
And that's that's destructive leadership, though.
Yes, it's very hard to follow that and be enthusiastic about it. And so one of his main lines to me was, Steve, you're not a very good team player. And I said, sir, I didn't come up here to be on a team. Came up here to do what's right for my district and for the American people and for the American economy. And I'm going to do that. And I'm not going to vote with you just because I'm a Republican. I said, I proudly run as a Republican, but I'm up here serving as an American.
Well, do you have any idea was it ever explained to you? Did you ever figure out where John Boehner was coming from, that he would defy his own constituency and the people in the country who voted for Republicans for so many years?
About the best he would ever offer. And I'm sort of sympathetic to it, but he'd say we're 1/3 of the government. Well, that's sort of true, but sort of not true also, because the other parties can't move forward without us. And so and then a lot of times it'd say, boys, we're doing the best we can do with what they can get through the Senate. Well, I don't think the American public sends us up here to do calculations. And I think they want us as separate bodies to make our independent choice. We do what we say we're going to do. The Senate has to take responsibility for its own actions. And so I think it's time for the Senate, for Mitch McConnell, to go back to the way the filibuster rule was back in the 70s. From the nation's founding to the 1970s, they had the filibuster rule, but you had to stand on the floor and you had to talk till you gave the floor up. We've seen Rand Paul do that a couple of times in the last couple of years. But basically, all you have to do now, starting in the 70s, you simply sign a piece of paper and turn it in saying, I'm going to filibuster this bill, and they don't make you do it. It's just a pro forma thing. And so make those people who are going to block bills from even being debated on the floor of the Senate actually stand there and hold the time. I will tell you the outcome would be much different if Mitch McConnell would do that. The Senate has gotten to where it just almost can't function. And I think it's time for them to go back to the rule that was in place.
Yeah, well, not only that, but I mean, the idea that, we've got our most unconstitutional president doing whatever he wants to do. And then all of the opportunities that occurred over the last 7 years to challenge him or to even give him a stunning setback, and people are not even trying. And you've got these two moderates, Boehner and McConnell, that are actually creating a disaster for the GOP and the country.
They are. Most of us feel like that our leadership has betrayed us. I think that's speaking for most of Republicans in the nation who voted Republicans feel betrayed, and I feel right along with them. And so,
I mean, this was an opportunity to lead. It was an opportunity to fight, to redefine what the Constitution, you know, if we're throwing it out, to try to redefine it or reassert it. And, well, folks, we've lost Steve Pierce there. He might call back. And, but you heard what he was saying. Basically that, you know, that you've got the leadership of McConnell and Boehner, and then on the what else can you say? I mean, it's just it was terrible leadership. We'll take a break here, and maybe Steve will call back. 621, you're listening to AM Las Cruces with Kelly O'Connell. 1450 KOBE, 523-1450, and we will be back. It was kind of a bad connection anyway, but Okay, here we go. Here's Steve again. Steve, is that you?
Yeah, something disconnected me. Sorry.
No problem. All right. So anyway, there has been this sense of this giant opportunity to stand up to Obama. And what has happened is, instead of that happening, nothing happened. And so it gives people the sense that whatever Obama did, even whether you had a Democratic Congress or a Republican Congress, what he did was so powerful or so correct that nobody could stand up to it. It was a terrible lesson to give to Americans.
It was a terrible lesson because a lot of people don't watch extremely closely. That's the reason we have a republic, not a democracy, is that people want to elect folks they know, send them to Washington to get into the mix and to represent them. And so as we would not contend for ourselves during the shutdown was a good example. That was 16 days. For 16 days, the president told the American people what he described we were doing, and not once during those 16 days did Mr. Boehner explain the other side what we were doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course, the American people responded against us because they had no other viewpoint, just the one. The president was very critical. There were reasons to shut the government down. There were reasons not to shut the government down. I'm fully aware of both of those. That we were trying to get some discipline in the budgeting process and some discipline that says we just can't keep spending our children's future away. So that's where the American people will listen, sort of with one ear open, and they got to live their lives and go about their business. And I don't think that Mr. Boehner was adequately reflecting the views of half the country.
Yeah, at least, but it was it really gave a sense of the total decline, like what the president was presenting to the people was a kind of America, inefficient, that was insolvent, that was internationally either incomprehensible or totally weak, and that to totally flood the country with foreigners and to give us a new identity, and all of that was the right thing to do. It's just been a terrible experience.
And it's been a terrible experience. People are frightened right now for the future. They're worried about the economic status of the country. They're worried about national security. Worried about terrorists who will come in through our northern, southern borders on airliners. They see the heads of people being cut off overseas for not giving in to the ISIS. And so I think people are pretty well alarmed at a lot of things. They're alarmed or concerned. And we in Washington, I think that both parties are turning a deaf ear to that, and especially the president when he says that he doesn't care what the American people think. He's going to chart his course and we're going to bail out the world. We're going to bring in people when we don't have enough jobs for the people who are here. So I just think that it's time for us all to step back and see what it's going to take to rebuild the country, not give just platitudes from Washington.
Yeah, and I mean, the leadership of Obama is schizophrenic, presenting himself as the world's smartest person in the beginning, allowing people to talk about him that way, and then coming up with so many mistakes. And he's like one of these first round quarterbacks that just turns into an interception machine, you know?
Yeah, I think that's well stated. I think we all were looking to him to unite the country. That's what he said he could do. He could bring us all together. I think one of the great failures is that he's been one of the most divisive presidents of all time. And I know that the police feel like that he's walked away and just hung them out to dry.
But that seems to be his strategy, is to divide and conquer. I mean, that was the strategy of the people that are, community disorganizers. But I mean, it's just terrible. It's terrible to have the experience of feeling like you live in a rotten country led by someone who feels like he's doing God's work to sell you out.
Yeah, and I think that most Americans realize we're not a rotten country, that we don't go in and take over other countries for their assets. We don't take their oil. We don't take this. We don't take that. And I think people are fed up with being apologized for when we didn't do anything wrong. I know that during the whole debate about the Iraq war, the Europeans and the rest of the world was saying, you're doing this for the oil. When you finally dug down to it, when we figured out where Iraq's oil had been going, it was going to the European countries. They were getting it below market prices. And so this whole idea that we're going to apologize for stuff that we've never done, the one that really sticks at my craw.
Yeah, and I mean, then he bows down to the Pope. I mean, it's just, I mean, the leadership should inspire you to reach higher, to try harder, to have a better vision like Ronald Reagan and Obama. Just makes you see his leadership, you just feel like not getting out of bed.
And you're correct. And I look at the Republicans and try to figure out among them, not necessarily endorsing it, but Carly Fiorina has a section in her speeches where she talks about one of the most important jobs of a manager of a company or the owner of a country, the president of the country here she's running for, is to empower the people around you and in society enough that they reach the highest potential that they can. Well, that's very powerful language, because we all want to reach the highest that we can go. So I know that in the presidential race now to replace Obama, we're stuck with what we have, and he's going to be there another 2 years. But God help us if we let another generation down and don't speak to those higher ideals that you're describing. Just the hope that we have as individuals for our own lives and for our kids' lives. That's where I think the heart of America lies. I think that's where our greatness has come from, that you could start anywhere and rise to any level that you wanted to. And that's being replaced by an elitism that says only if you're in the right places in Washington or New York or Los Angeles can you rise. The rest of you out there, y'all just shuffle off to work every day. And so I really am looking for a leader that can carry us there.
What do you think of Kevin McCarthy?
I got about one more minute.
What do you think of Kevin McCarthy as a leader?
I think that Americans are looking for us to do something different. I like Kevin fine. I like John Boehner fine. But I think that Americans will be very disappointed. They'll see it as another John Boehner if we move Kevin up. And that may be what is the best for us. But I don't think that our Republican conference has made a decision on that yet. There is sort of one group of the representatives are saying, everybody just moves up a slot. There is another voice saying, wait, we need to listen to America, and we need to do what America wants. And so that question then becomes not who, but how and what. Where do we go with the country? What is our vision? Not who are we going to put in a speaker. It's, I think, about principles, not about a person's it's not a personality. It's about principles. And so I think that the decision has not been made yet, even though there are many in the press who say, oh, Kevin McCarthy's next, he's heir apparent. So that's what we're going to decide. Probably we have a meeting here in about 30 minutes, another one this afternoon at 5, and I think we'll decide if we're going to move everybody up a notch or if we're going to slow this thing down and have a vote late in October when the speaker's actually leaving. I'm voting that we wait till late in October, that we not make a quick decision, because I think we've got to get this one right.
Absolutely. I mean, after the debacle of Boehner, I mean, it's one thing to have to work against a president. It's another thing to have your own leader just like, you know, decide he's just going to parachute out of the plane right after it takes off.
Yeah. All right, my friend, I got to run.
Thanks for the call, Steve. Have a great day.
Okay, you too.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. All right, Steve Pierce there. All right, folks. Looks like our guest is our second guest is not going to make it. Sometimes people get cold feet. Sometimes they oversleep. Then again, it's pretty early. 6:31. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on AM 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. And I just got done talking to U.S. Representative Steve Pierce, and we'll be back to. Gosh, I got a lot of stories, but hopefully have time to get into a few juicy ones for you. And hold on just a second here. The do have Walt Rubel as, of course, coming in the second hour. So that little fun pack show.
I hear something saying.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Hey, it's Deborah. Good morning.
Hey, it's Kelly.
I was able to confront a person that had a dog.
What's
in
that?
A shopping cart.
What's that?
I was able to confront a shopper that
okay.
had a dog in her
Deborah.
Shopping cart on Sunday.
Deborah.
She was embarrassed.
Deborah, can I put you
yes.
on, can I put you on hold and we'll bring this on?
Okay, thank you, sir.
Sure.
OBE, there's no better place to be.
Well, we've got a caller, and the caller has been on a crusade to confront and frustrate those people bringing their pets into the supermarkets and restaurants and stores. Deborah, you had an incident in which you confronted a lady who brought a pet into a store?
Yes, sir. It happened Sunday at Albertsons.
Which Albertsons?
And, excuse me.
Which Albertsons?
On El Paseo. And the management was wonderful. First, I told an employee,
uh-huh.
and the employee said, well, they're allowed to have dogs in the carts. I said, no, they're not. So the management said that only she's allowed to say anything to them. But she went from the back to the front, and I seen her again. So then I told her immediately. She took the dog out. It was on a leash. And then, but I don't like the comparison. Well, they put children in them. I said, well, most children have diapers on. So she was embarrassed, and I just can't understand. There's no comparison whatsoever between a human being in the cart and an animal.
Uh huh. And so. What kind of a dog was it? Was it a German Shepherd or a Chihuahua?
No, it was a medium-sized dog, and it was on a leash, and it did have a service,
wow.
some kind of a vest on with a number, service.
Holy cow, you challenged
yeah.
someone with a service dog. What if they had a heart attack while that dog was in the car?
In the cart?
Car.
Well, I don't know. The woman was young. Well, she could still have a heart condition. But she would not answer me when I said, what does that dog service you? How does that dog service you? And then she was talking to another woman. Then I found the manager for the second time. And so I made sure I followed through and made sure that that cart was going to get washed.
Uh-huh.
So she had an employee take the cart from the woman out in the parking lot and take it back to the janitor's closet to get washed.
Well,
Albertsons are doing well.
Albertsons must have been really grateful for you to show up Sunday.
Yes, but the thing is this. I had told them previously, and I'm involved with some other issues. I am going to call them today, the main number, because as I've told you before, that little notice that's lined up with a bunch of – nobody reads it. It's hard to see about animals.
Uh-huh.
And so I says, you need to put a bigger sign. And I says, well, I will call headquarters. She says, please do. She says, I'm just a peon, she said. So I will do that.
And do you feel like there were hairs and perhaps ticks or fleas or excrement floating off this animal?
I don't know. Well, I did notice she did take the blanket out of the top of the cart when she put the dog on the ground. And, but you don't know what's on that blanket either.
Uh-huh. Could be a lot nasty stuff.
Well, it could be. I mean, the dog looked clean. It wasn't scratching or anything, but you just don't know. You have no idea. And, I mean, Albertsons are doing what they could. She Googled it. And they have to be very, very careful. I mean, none of the employees, only a manager, can speak and tell her to take that dog out.
You know, Deborah, maybe you should bring with you when you're shopping in the future an air horn like they use on boats. You find a person with a dog or any kind of an animal in the store to confront them and blast the air horn to alert the manager?
Well, I don't think she'll do it again. I think she was very embarrassed.
But if it's a service dog, Deborah, I mean, did it ever occur to you could be depriving her of her only means of security for her health?
Well, she can have it on the floor, you know, on a leash.
You said it was on a leash.
Yes, but in the cart, sitting in the cart, didn't she put it down?
I see. Okay, Deborah. Yeah. Well, thanks, and thanks for becoming Las Cruces' anti-animal in supermarket crusader. Do you feel like you're doing the Lord's work?
Yeah, I think it'll be beneficial.
Right. Are you sure it's beneficial? Okay, thanks, Deborah. Have a great day. All right, as they say, Helpy Helperton, making sure that the animals are being kept out of the supermarket. 523-1450. All right, so, well, that was kind of an interesting little story there. All right, so Deborah helping with public. It is 6:40, and you're listening to Amos Cruces on 1450 KOBE, 523-1450, and we're going to come back. I've got a couple of juicy stories for you. Justin Bieber wants to be like Jesus.
No. That's the sound of the men working on the chain. Dang, that's the sound of the men working on the chain. Dang.
It's 6:44, and yeah, we've got a little story on Justin Bieber who wants to live like Jesus. I mean, what is he going to get his apostles? He's probably got a bunch of hangers on already. But I had heard a long time ago that Bieber was a Christian. He's anti-abortion, and so who knows? Maybe he'll come out. He'll end up being an evangelist or something. Then again, don't hold your breath. So Mars has water on it. Do you think that water means life? 523-1450. Oscar nominee subjects to this year to be a heavy dose of lesbian genders and pedophiles. So do you think pedophilia is the next big deal, like Bruce Jenner becoming Caitlyn Genital? Do you think pedophilia is going to be normalized? Is there going to be an argument that pedophiles are born that way? They can't help it. They have every right to be happy, kind of a thing. Seems like that's the direction that the culture is going in. 523-1450. Michelle Obama and Colbert. Oh, Colbert, whatever his name is, laugh at Bill Clinton's philandering. Colbert, you know, I don't understand why you would put someone who's seems to me pretty far left into a talk show. But then again, everybody in the media, in the entertainment industry, I guess, is supposed to be a leftist. Donald Trump talking about tax reform for security and prosperity. What do you think about that? 0%, 10%, 20%, and 25% rates of taxation. And it could be exciting, huh? So what do you think about, you know, Donald Trump has recently, the media has always been after Trump to attack him, but recently there's been more and more claims that he's finished, and yet he's coming up with things that I think a lot of people might find tasty. 4 tax brackets, according to the Wall Street Journal, 0%, 10%, 20%, 25%, no marriage penalty, no alternative minimum tax. And what they're thinking of, and I think Norquist, the famous anti-tax crusader, is suggesting that there's a lot of money that's trapped out there that's being taxed away, or that's that's in the system that could come out and support business, either in spending or creating businesses, and they feel like that this is the way to possibly get this economy moving again. Jeb Bush himself famously just said 5% rate of growth is possible if we reform the tax code, if we have the right rules out there. Now, there's the claim that ISIS is planning a nuclear tsunami. Let's come back and talk about that a little bit. I got behind in my ads with Steve Pierce, but we'll be back and talk about the nuclear tsunami. Well, I've got a story here. Putting aside the ISIS tsunami of, I think it's sad that the that Putin is having to lead the attack against ISIS, but it goes without saying, doesn't it? There's a panhandler that attacked a Las Cruces female police officer. I did some research on this guy, Timothy Ray Allison. He is a registered sex offender and had attacked a girl in Michigan when she was 13, and his case was decided in 1989. So he is, I guess, a pedophile, or at least registered sex offender here. Now, he has attacked a lady in Las Cruces. He's also got convictions in or stuff going on in Texas. And it looks like possibly in Indiana, but here is a little clip on this story.
Coming up to out at 10. Now, out of Metro Mobile Newsroom is bringing this story tonight. Say, yesterday morning, 46-year-old Timothy Ray Allison charged at the officer and repeatedly punched her. Court documents we got state Allison even bit the woman.
He bit her two times in her forearm while he was struggling with her. He spit, from what I understand, multiple times on her face while he was struggling and fighting her.
The court documents state the officer trying to cite out her panhandler passing at an auto shop at Solano and Amador. The officer says when Allison rushed in her direction, her taser wouldn't go off. That's when the officer says Allison attacked her and even went for her gun. A Las Cruces spokesman says the officer has minor cuts and bruises, thanks in part to a passerby pulling the man off her. Timothy Ray Allison is a registered sex offender in Texas. He is believed to be homeless, and police say he is known to beg for money. Panhandling is illegal in Las Cruces. But how big of a problem is it? ABC 7's Jamie Warren, live from Out of Mexico Mobile Newsroom. Jamie?
Rick, a manager here at Breakmasters tells me they've been having issues with this one individual for months, and that's why they decided to get law enforcement involved.
He's a known panhandler, and he's also been criminally trespassed from that property, meaning he's been given a trespass card where he agrees not to be back on that property.
Well, anyway, I've seen that guy out there on the once. It's seen him out there many, many times. I had seen him out there panhandling, and I kind of wondered. I saw the police go after him one day. We do have Walt Rubel coming in, but here is the story on the nuclear tsunami. I'm trying to get this story to move, but it's there's a couple of websites I always have a problem with. One of them is Washington Times. They put so many ads on it, and then also Breitbart. I don't know what it is about. Then Huffington Post sometimes too, but a lot of these pages have ads. They sell clicks or they sell views on their videos, these advertising videos. And what happens, you open up the page and these things open up and it just kind of immobilizes the page. So I'll have to talk to you about that when we come back after the break. But anyway, a lot of big news. Did you see the moon, by the way? The blood moon, very red. I saw a lot of people out on the street looking at it. Some people claim that it's the end of the age, you know. So the The fact of the matter is, it was spectacular. It was big, and it did have red color. So that was kind of fun. We've got the change in leadership with Boehner. Now they're talking about bringing in a new head of the Senate, and that basically somebody said that the reason that Boehner failed was because McConnell was a failure, that he refused to advocate for these bills coming out. And I mean, it seemed like both of these guys are very middle of the road and ended up being people that maybe were better at one time than another, but we have an opportunity now that the GOP has an opportunity to move forward. And even when the president has seemed very weak, the GOP didn't take advantage of it. So it's, you know, John Boehner, I would say, hurt the country. Mitch McConnell hurt the country. We need somebody to stand up. There has to be two strong parties out there, not just one. 6:59, Kelly O'Connell. And we'll have Walt Rubel coming in Las Cruces, 523-1450 to call in on 1450 KOBE. And we'll be back on the break of the hour. And I'll tell you about the tsunami.
That's what you know.
That's the sound of the men working on the chain. Gang. That's the sound of the men working on the chain. Gang. All day long they work so hard till the sun is going down. Working on the highways and byways and wearing a frown. You hear them moaning their lives away, then you hear.
It's 7:06. Today is the 29th, and got Walt Rubel here, and just want to give you the temperature out there, 67, 94 high, 65 low. It seemed kind of hot yesterday.
Yeah, it's chilly this morning, though. It's starting to feel like fall again.
Yeah, it feels pretty good. All right, so I was asking Walt off the air what's going on in the city, and I guess the excitement of the races hasn't hit you yet.
Well, I think that's fair to say. The time frame is just so compressed with this municipal election.
What do you think of that?
Well, I kind of like it, but for you know, my job, it just makes it a lot more intense and a lot more difficult.
Yeah.
We've got all of these new people. There are two open seats this year. And so
where on the city council?
Yeah, Miguel is giving up his seat in order to run for mayor. And Nathan Small is not running for re-election. So
have you heard what Nathan's going to do? Obviously too young to retire.
Yeah, no, I politically I have not. I mean, I believe that he's still working with the Wilderness Alliance, and that's how he puts bread on the table.
Yeah.
I've heard rumblings that maybe he'll take a run for state legislature.
I've heard that too.
Yeah. So
with his buddy Jeff Steinborn.
Yeah.
What race is kind of stirring up the most interest in your opinion?
Well, obviously I think the mayor's race, it sort of sets up as a classic. You have two members of the current city council going against each other, Ken Miyagashima, the incumbent mayor, and Miguel Silva. And then you have Gina Ortiz, who is the sort of outsider coming in, and hadn't heard of her, didn't know anything about her until she threw her hat in the ring. Haven't had a chance to sit down with her yet. And so I really.
You guys did a story on her. Somebody interviewed her.
Yeah. Diana Albus-Lahr did that. And she, I believe, is going to be doing the news side of it this year, which is nice for me. And in the past, I often would do both the editorial side and write the endorsement and the news side and write the story. And ideally, you really don't want to do it that way. You want to have two different people so it doesn't look like one is influencing the other.
Yeah. Other races, I guess there's a municipal judge race with Kieran Ryan. He's going to come on tomorrow, and Bill Kinsella.
Yeah, and boy, I couldn't tell you a thing about that one. I mean, I've talked to Kieran before. I think the last time he ran, I mean, I'm sure we've had him into the editorial board and doing an endorsement interview with him. But boy, that you talk about under the radar, that's one of those races that unless you're, you know, working within the legal community, or unless there are problems like there were a few years ago with Judge Locatelli, it doesn't get a lot of attention.
Yeah. Do you sense that there is a pushback towards maybe having more conservatives or more Republicans in city and county positions?
Well, we'll find out. I mean, certainly that is the opinion of the Chamber of Commerce. One of the things I'm going to be interested in is there was this new business group that came up at the same time that the recall took place. And they funneled a lot of money into the recall. And I'm going to be curious to see whether they are that active in the election. And, you know, if not, will it appear that the money they spent on the recall could have been better spent, which is what I was arguing all along.
Right. Yeah. Okay. All right. So we've got now we had the blood moon. And
yeah.
Did you see the blood moon?
I did. It's beautiful. I mean, that was, yeah. How could you miss it?
How could you miss it? All right. So, all right. And I asked you about the biblical implications, and you said there were astronomical implications.
Yeah. I said, I believe it was something to do with light refracting off the moon.
All right. So he stepped out of the batter's box on that pitch. So I'm going to just, I didn't do this before, but I looked it up in the Bible, Joel 2:31. 2:31, the sun will turn to darkness and the moon to blood before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. There's one from the Old Testament.
Yeah.
Now here's one from Acts. The sun will be turned to darkness and the moon to blood before the coming of the great and glorious day of the Lord. Same basic verse.
When they say sun turned to darkness, though, doesn't that imply during the daytime? I mean, it's always dark at night, so that doesn't seem like a sign of anything.
It could be, yeah, that there would be an eclipse or maybe sort of a thing that would cause darkness.
Right.
And here's Revelation 6:12. I watched as he opened the sixth seal. There was a great earthquake. The sun turned black like sackcloth made of goat hair. The whole moon turned blood red. So a lot of people are saying that the super moon, this red moon, these blood moons, or the I can't remember what the phrase was, that there's a lot of biblical writers that are kind of coming up with this, you know, prophecy. You've got these moons coming in a row.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's a phenomenon that happens every few years. I can't remember when the last one was, but it's not one of these things that is so rare, and just my opinion, but I won't be planning for the end of the world myself.
Of course. I'm just trying to remember, there was some book that came out that the four blood moons. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, and I wonder, was this the fourth or the third, or?
Are they supposed to be like four in succession or?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And I know, I mean, I think John Hagee wrote a book, but I didn't read it, but all right. So anyway, okay, so the Pope came, and what did you think about that?
I thought it was wonderful, and I say this from the position of as we have established on this show before, I am a deist, I believe, is what we've determined.
You say it not as a supplicant.
So I guess the one word that comes to mind is inclusive in terms of what his message was.
Very
yes,
inclusive.
Yes. And to me, from my perspective, that is different. That is something that people who are on the outside of the church don't feel very much. We feel a lot of condemnation. We feel a lot of judgment.
Sure.
And you don't get any of that from this man. I mean, there was something he said that I'm sure went unnoticed by most people. He said, "I ask for you to pray for me," which I assume that every pope through the history has said that. Mm-hmm. But then he added, "If you can't pray for me, I ask for you to give me good wishes." When I heard that, I thought, wow, he's including me.
Are you, you're not turning towards Rome, are you?
No,
Walt?
No, I'm expressing an affinity I have for this man and for his message. I thought, you know, beginning to end, the stop at the Ground Zero Memorial, skipping lunch with the leaders of Congress so that you could have lunch with the homeless instead. Visiting the prison in Philadelphia. I mean, stopping his motorcade so that he could get out and bless the young man or the child with cerebral palsy in the wheelchair. I mean, I just thought step after step after step, this is a man who is doing everything within his power to bring people in, to make people feel like they are included. And I just think that is such a rare thing, not only in religion, but just in the world today. We are so divided in so many, you know, classes, whether it's political or economical or religion. And, you know, Martin Luther King said it. I think he's right that we're never more divided than we are on Sunday mornings. And I just, you know, I feel like he did a wonderful job of not only preaching to the flock, and this was a Catholic service. I mean, this was, you know, mass. I spent more time watching TV, you know, seeing Catholic masses than I have, you know, the rest of my life, which is probably not a bad thing. I just thought it was a terrific trip.
523-1450. All right, so somebody told me, somebody who's actually a member of the Greek Orthodox Church told me that she was listening to the Pope and that he said, it doesn't matter what you've done, what sins you've done in the past. It doesn't matter what you believe. We're all going to be saved. And she said, I said, well, what do you think when he said that? And she said, I didn't like it.
Yeah.
And I said, well, why not? And she said, well, it just seems to suggest that faith doesn't matter and the church doesn't matter and Jesus doesn't matter. And so, you know, what's the point of being the Pope if everybody gets saved?
Yeah, and I didn't hear that, and so it's hard for me to respond to. I suspect that she may not have interpreted what he said exactly correctly, because my understanding of church orthodoxy, whether it's Catholic, I mean, it's pretty universal throughout the Christian religion, is that you have to accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior in order to get into heaven.
So, yeah.
I would be very surprised if he said, no, that's not the case.
Well, I mean, I researched this a couple of years ago and got information that the deep teaching of, if you tap down into the theology, because there are layers and layers of theology in the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
And this whole history of not just canon law, but papal statements that go anywhere from off the cuff to statements that are considered to be canonical, and that if you are the member of a religion and are true to that religion, then you will be saved. Now, I've got to go back and study that. I'm not even really sure. I don't know. I can't really say that I know 100% what is canonical and what's not in the church. This is what we stand for 100%. But it gave the idea that the true believers of the world will be saved. But then I think, well, on the other hand, if that's true, doesn't a true believer in Islam at some point get called into jihad against the true believer of Christ and then possibly kill him? And then you've got a jihadist in heaven standing before Christ waiting to hear you've done well.
Boy, I have a problem with the fact that you assume that a true believer in the Muslim religion is a jihadist.
Hmm. I'm not saying that's the only way, but there's a call to jihad in the history of Islam that seems to be canonical to me. I mean, there are times that the believers are called to jihad.
So, do you believe that the true believer of any religion gets into heaven? Or,
well, that's not my understanding.
Okay.
Mine
either. I mean, that's not what I was taught, at least.
Yeah. Do you hang on to any of the stuff you were taught as a kid in terms of the specifics?
Well, in terms of the morality that I was taught, yes. I mean, there are wonderful teachings to be had in Sunday school, which is, you know, where I went every Sunday. I went to a Presbyterian church, and the services were for the adults, and the kids got shuffled off to Sunday school. I carry a lot of that with me. But ironically, it's the whole concept of heaven and hell, and the whole idea that you have to be one of us, that really drove me away from the church. That is so counter to my concept of right and wrong.
Okay.
That that was where I had my crisis of faith.
Do you think that there is an afterlife, a heaven and hell, time spent with God or away from God?
I think that there is an afterlife, and what that is, I'm not certain, but I feel very strongly that it it's not determined by which faith you happen to believe,
but what whether you're a good person.
Yeah, yeah.
5-2-3-14-50. All right, folks. The Pope came and he impressed some people. He infuriated some others, but he was impossible to miss.
Yeah, and you know the people who were infuriated, I'm not sure that I get it because, I mean, it is absolutely true that he touched on all of the things that he touched on: global warming, income inequality, all of the things that were brought up as this huge deal before he came here. Yeah, he spoke about those things, but that's not what I remember from this trip.
What do you remember? The inclusiveness.
I remember him stopping the motorcade and going over to that kid in the wheelchair. I mean, that's the image I've got.
Yeah. Now, what I'd like to know, and any hardcore Catholics can call in, when you hear the Pope saying things that you, let's just say that you consider these to be non-canonical or non-teachings of the Church, is he out of line or is he expanding church, the area of, you know, the ground of belief?
Yeah, no, that's the question.
Yeah. All right, we're here with Walt Rubel, and we're going to come back and get into the Pope a little bit more and then some of the national politics and John Boehner, these type of things. 720, you're listening to AM Las Cruces with Kelly O'Connell, guests today of Walt Rubel, Sun News on 1450 KOBE. 523-1450, and we'll be back in just a second to dive into those. And here with Walt. And all right, so Walt, what national stories besides the Pope? I want to just dig into a little bit more. I wonder, I mean, I should look this up. How many people in the United States currently consider themselves Catholics?
I heard that figure somewhere, but I don't remember what it is. I know that it's not going in the right direction in terms of the Catholic Church. And one of the things I heard a lot of discussion on was how it's moving from the Northeast, which used to be the center of the Church, to the Southwest.
And we do have a phone call. It's Kelly here. Who's this?
Sergio. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you doing?
Good morning, Sergio. And what's on your mind?
Well, first of all, I want to say I'm not Catholic, but I do believe that the Pope has the right, as anyone else, to express his opinions, his theology, or his philosophy, rather, ideology. And with that being said, I was pretty happy that he didn't mention the fact about the pedophile problem with the priest, and that he was saying that bishops and cardinals, if they know about this stuff, they're just as guilty.
Well, of course that's true.
That wasn't the message before we were getting. Go ahead.
Pardon me?
Well, Kelly said, of course, that's true, but I just added, that's not the message we were getting before from the hierarchy of the Catholic Church, it didn't seem to
No. be. No, we weren't, and I guess it's been expressed enough concern by a lot of people, Catholics included, about this problem. But, you know, like I said, with that being said, I just wanted to go ahead and let you know that I was kind of glad that he acknowledged that.
Well, I mean, you say he's allowed to have his own opinion. I mean, what if the president got up and, you know, said in a speech that NFL is too violent and he is opposed to that and we need to develop another pastime, and then you see him later at an NFL game, you know, singing the Star Spangled Banner or whatever?
Well,
it's confusing to people.
That's true, but, I don't know. Maybe I'm just splitting hairs, but I mean... You know, he does have his opinion about, you know, the global warming and you know.
But how do you here's the problem. According to Catholic theology, the Pope is essentially another apostle in function, because he's in contact with God. He can make pronouncements that, you know, he's representing the Church.
Right.
He's making pronouncements that can become. I think everybody knows that not everything the Pope says is going to be chiseled into stone and put in the archives as God's word, but There are certain things that the Pope can do or the church can do to make pronouncements that are like the Bible, that have to be adhered to. And I'm just wondering, isn't it confusing if he's speaking his opinion on a bunch of stuff? When's he speaking for the church versus when's he speaking for himself?
Well, you know, I mean, we do the same thing, Kelly. I mean, we go to church, and, you know, what we hear at church, we don't really live by it all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and so he's no different than anyone else.
But
I
Sergio, you're making him a layman, though. You're making him just another person, and he is the official leader of the church, and according to Catholic theology, he's hugely important in the scope of things.
Of course. But first and foremost, he's a man. He's flesh and blood like the rest of us. You know, and I don't know. I just think that takes precedent over, you know, I mean, that's like if I use the metaphor of a woman being a hooker, she's a woman first. You know, and
well, I'm not sure a lot of Catholics would like to hear that analogy.
Well, I'm just saying, I'm not trying to trigger any anger or anything. Like I said, I'm not be splitting hairs, but he did address some things that some people, not all, are concerned with, and he addressed the problem with the pedophile, issue, which
okay.
I think was.
All right. Thanks for the call. Good points, Squall.
Yeah, I think that he's always speaking for the church. I don't think you can ever separate that.
I agree.
Unless he's ordering eggs for breakfast. But, you know, anytime he's making a pronouncement about...
He might get them eggs Benedict in honor of his former...
The red shoe wearing Pope. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that... and he understands that, I think. So when he says things like, who am I to judge regarding homosexuality, I don't think that's off the cuff. I think he understands very
all
well.
Right. And so, I mean, but here's another problem. And it's like, you know, if you've got pedophile priests, and I know that he's talking about homosexual priests, and we say, you know, homosexuals are different from pedophiles, even if they're abusing boys. But it brings up the sense that it's not the church's business as to what the priests are doing on their off hours when this has been a huge deal in terms of the pedophile thing.
Oh, that's not what I read into that.
All right.
I didn't read into that, who am I to judge, meaning it's okay if our priests are pedophiles. I think we all judge
that. Well, of course he didn't mean that, but it seems to imply that it just struck me as weird when the church has had an enormous problem with some priests for him to say, we don't want to get too deep into their beliefs or activities in the sense of they're allowed to have their own beliefs in private life.
And you're taking that.
I had a problem because it seems to me you're a priest, your life is consecrated to God. You know, I mean that every part of your life is important to the if you're a priest.
No, I get that. But when he is saying things like, who am I to judge regarding homosexuality, I don't think he's talking about priests. I think he's talking about the entire society at large.
All right. So let me ask you this. But I think he was talking about the priests. He said that about the priests, and I'd have to go back and get his exact statements. But if he found out that there was a priest, or if it was brought to the church's attention that a priest was dating another man, would that be a problem? According to what he said, I was just confused.
Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't there on the plane when the question was asked and answered. My take on that was he was just asked in general, is homosexuality this great sin that we need to be concerned about?
And what did he say?
And he said, well, who am I to judge?
But, I mean, at the same time, the church, I find it confusing because the church has got to take a position pro, con, neutral on the issue, and it seems to be confusing.
Yeah, no, well, it's confusing in that it is certainly different. I mean, that is not the response that we have ever gotten before from a pope or from a Catholic leader.
All right. According to KVOA.com from Tucson, in 1965, there were 46 million Catholics, and now there are 66 million. And 21% of Arizonans are Catholic, and I would assume a larger percent of New Mexicans are Catholic.
That surprises me. So it's gone up by 20 million?
Well, it's gone up, but what is in terms of being a percent of...
Right, the population's gone up, too. I get that. But still, that's surprising to me.
All right, we'll take a little break here and come back and talk about some of these other issues like John Boehner bowing out. And at 7:32 with Walt Rubel, AM Las Cruces with Kelly O'Connell, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450, call in. Always feel free to call in if you disagree. Kelly O'Connell will be right back. Kelly here in talking to Walt Rubel, and you know, I just to mention to you, there were robes. There was a college of what they called a college of religion in ancient Rome, and you had the Arval Brethren, the Flamen Dialis is the singular priest of Zeus. You'll recognize this, the Vestal Virgins, and there was a number of other groups in this college, what they called the college, and when they did their official functions, they did wear the same robes that the Catholic priests wear now, these what they call sacerdotal robes. It's kind of an interesting continuation on some elements from the ancient Romans into the Catholic Church.
Yeah, and it seems to me like a lot of the ceremony, is that the right word? I don't want to be offensive, but a lot of what it has obviously dates back centuries.
Obviously, when you go to the church and you see the sun coming in through the stained glass, I mean, these ancient cathedrals had beautiful stained glass. So, and the incense and everything, but I think the Catholic Church and the history is a worthwhile study, and we do have a phone call here. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Ben.
Good morning, Ben. How you doing? Hope you're well. And what's up?
I just wanted to correct Walt humbly if on his statements about the Pope's comments. When the Pope, by the definition of infallibility, is protected according to Catholic doctrine from teaching or changing the faith in terms of faith and morals. So when the Pope is speaking, you know, for example, the "Who am I to judge" comment is more of a his own pastoral. He is speaking as a pastor, but not necessarily on the doctrine of gay marriage.
That's actually a very brilliant point. Are you Catholic, Ben?
Yes.
All right. So was there anything that the Pope said that really kind of raised the hairs on the back of your neck that, you know, you shouldn't be going in that direction kind of a thing?
Well, I think the only thing is that the media takes his statements and they have a political agenda and they use them to their benefit. But the Pope was not saying that the church is going to change her position. In fact, the Pope has several times defended the church's teaching on traditional marriage between one man, one woman. So the fact that she's being more pastoral does not mean that the church is changing her position. I think as a Catholic, we're used to, you know, with Pope John Paul, we had one of the world's foremost philosophers, and then with Pope Benedict, we had the foremost biblical theologian, and now with Francis, what we have is a great pastor and one that is bringing a lot of people into the church. So he's not speaking theologically or philosophically. What he's speaking is pastorally, saying, why should we judge someone? Why should he judge as a pastor? That doesn't mean we're changing the church's position, but he counts it as one sin among many. Nonetheless, it's a grave error that the church stands against, but we also should approach this pastorally. And how do we reach out to those individuals with same-sex attraction?
All right. So there's no doubt that Pope John Paul was a brilliant writer and thinker. If anybody who's ever read Crossing the Threshold of Hope, which is online for free, it's absolutely brilliant, a brilliant book. And it shows, and it was dictated to his secretary, so it was off the cuff. But what do you think that the media has portrayed him as a leftist or has mischaracterized him?
I do. I think the media has taken some of those statements that he makes, and he may make one comment about global warming, for example, and again, in his personal opinion on global warming and political and these political things or economics, and the media takes him and runs with him as if this is all that he said. They ignore what he says about abortion. They ignore what he says about
Ben, Walt's got a question.
The media, like Walt, oftentimes has selective intention. They like, well, to, they like mean, to draw attention to what they want and ignore areas that they don't,
Ben,
that they don't find as convenient.
Ben, Walt's got something for you.
Ben, when he gives an encyclical. And first of all, I defer to your knowledge on this. And I appreciate the correction. I believe that what you said is right about him being pastorally. But when he gives encyclical on global warming, that's more than just an off-the-cuff, comment on an airplane.
It's got to be.
Well, certainly his opinion of global warming is weightier than mine. As a rank and file Catholic.
Ben,
he does have weight. And he's speaking pastorally. But again, going
Ben,
back to the Catholic dogma of infallibility, he could be wrong on this.
Well, okay, so how does it work if the Pope is protected by God from misspeaking in terms of ethics and morals? How does it work when he does make a mistake? Something that even somebody like you, whose faith would say he's made a mistake. How does that work in terms of fallibility and church doctrine?
Well, there's nothing in church doctrine that says we have to believe in this or that political structure or political ideology or global warming. He certainly has the obligation to weigh in from his experience and his background. His protection of the Holy Spirit, according to our beliefs, is a negative protection on behalf of the people of God, that he's not going to change the church's definition of marriage, on contraception, on for example, sacraments, the Eucharist, the Mass. These things are not going to change, and God protects the people of God in that way. So when he speaks on economics and he speaks on other things, he speaks from a global pastoral perspective, not necessarily that's not something the Holy Spirit divinely dictates to him. That's not the way it works. Again, it's a protection of the people of God, so that this tradition, this deposit of faith, will be handed on from generation to generation untouched.
So, Ben, hold on a second.
I guess my question is, why is stewardship of the earth just a political point, and other things are not? Other things are more fundamental in your mind.
No, stewardship of the earth is the call for all humanity to take care of the earth. And he makes a few comments to global warming, and that's what the media jumps on. And they don't see the whole aspect of sacramentality, if you will, of the earth and some of the brilliant points that he makes. And they only jump on, one or two comments that he makes on global warming, as if he was just about global warming, which is not true.
Anything else, Walt?
No.
Ben, thanks for the call. Very illustrative and illuminating.
You.
And thanks. Have a great day. All right, folks, we'll take a little break here. I don't know. I still feel a little confused. What I've got to do is, I think, Walt and my dear listeners out there, I've got to spend a little time studying infallibility in papal doctrine and everything so I can come back and give a better report.
Yeah.
7:43, we're going to come back and talk about the infallibility of John Boehner.
I think we understand where that
which right. seems to have lapsed a long time ago. 7:44, we'll be right back. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450 on KOBE. Hey, it's Kelly.
Yes, Kelly, it's Frank calling about your previous caller.
Yeah, did you want to wait and say something on the air?
Okay.
All right, and what are we going to talk about?
Well, I studied theology for 40-plus years, and if I'm hearing him correctly, he said something I've never heard more with regard to the infallibility issue, which he characterized a negative protection for the church that would protect the deposit of truth. I never heard that anywhere. That's very, very interesting and quite honestly somewhat strange.
Well, I mean, it would certainly be convenient if that were true.
Well, yeah. It would be a dream come true if that were possible. To protect truth from a negative perspective so that it would never change. Like I said, I've never heard that explanation of infallibility at all.
Well, and it also brings up the point that, does that mean the church doctrine has never changed?
Well, I would pursue that with vigor, because I don't know that you need to necessarily talk about the substance of truth changing, but the interpretation and the understanding of all things increases, in my opinion.
Yeah, I've got to go back and study the doctrine of infallibility. I can honestly say that I don't understand it. I thought the Pope had gone way overboard in some of the stuff that he said, but if he's speaking as a pastorally, which I guess you can make an argument for, then all bets are off.
Well, the technical term is ex cathedra.
Yes.
When the Pope claims ex cathedra, then he claims to be speaking in infallibility.
Folks, we've got Frank, and Frank has studied theology for almost 50 years. He did not recognize Ben's description of papal infallibility. Frank?
Yes, it was interesting as I listened to your previous caller that he sort of gave the infallibility issue, as he called it, a negative characterization, which would simply protect the deposit of truth from changing or being misunderstood or mistaken. I've never read that anywhere. I've never understood it from that perspective. It would be incredibly convenient if it were so. How would that work would be my first question with regard to any Pope who would choose to speak ex cathedra, which is the technical theological term, when the Pope claims infallibility. Any Pope, as I understand the history of the Roman Church, has the right to speak ex cathedra or in an infallible way when he feels that is in fact the case, and could speak ex cathedra on any topic. Now, I agree completely that the Pope here recently is talking pastorally. He's not speaking ex cathedra. He's not speaking as though he's infallible. He's simply making his positive comments about world issues, social issues, even with the climate and those kinds of things. But, I totally agree with that part of it. But the previous statement about the infallibility being a negative characterization of protection of the truth, I'd like for him to cite that for me, and I'd look it up today.
Well, and it brings up to mind, if the Pope in the year 500 radically disagrees with the Pope in the year 2000 on something of apparently moral substance, which Pope wins? We'd almost have to have a playoff.
Well, we could make it humorous, but for Roman Catholics, it's very serious.
Well, I mean,
the whole idea that a human being could be infallible, for me, is in question. I do appreciate the ministry of the Holy Spirit in theology and those kinds of things.
Yeah.
But for a mortal to be infallible poses problems for me.
Well, and I mean, the doctrine in the New Testament was not that the apostles were infallible, but that the Holy Spirit at some point worked through them in their writings and preserved, with their personality coming through, the Holy Spirit worked with the individuals at the time that they were writing missives or epistles or gospels or whatever, to preserve that as being truth. Whereas it does not teach that the apostles were flawless.
No, I don't think there's any indication at all in the New Testament of infallibility. And I would contend that anyone today who would, I think, fulfill the requirements of living in a way that would have fettered the Holy Spirit, if you will, to work with them, through them, would be able to accomplish good things that might even be considered great. I think the Pope these days, in my opinion, and I haven't seen a book like this in my lifetime, who embodies what he believes, I think he does, in fact, inspire many people because he's true to what he says.
Absolutely.
And I think to some degree the Spirit is working through.
Okay, thank you so much for the call, and let's talk again about this soon. I we got to take a break. Well, I've got to go to another topic. Thanks for the call. All right. Well, you've got 5 minutes to cover John Boehner.
Well, the headline on my column this week was Boehner steps down, searches on for a new scapegoat.
Oh, okay. So the Tea Partiers, the conservatives, are seeking a unicorn. They're looking for
looking for a scapegoat
for the Holy Land. They think that if they get the right person in there, they can radically change the government.
I guess that's what they think. They don't understand the concept that they don't have the votes. Plain and simple, they don't have the votes.
But they had the votes to get rid of Boehner?
No, they didn't. Boehner got rid of himself. I mean, there was rumblings that there was going to be a vote to vacate the chair. They would have lost that by 3-1 margin.
All right.
I mean,
why did he leave?
He left. Did you see him when he walked to the podium to announce that he was leaving?
Mm-hmm.
He's singing zippity-doo-da, zippity-day. I have never seen a man more happy to leave his job in my life. He left because he has spent the last several years trying to corral a group of hardliners, including Steve Pearce, who cannot be corralled, who cut him off at the knees at every opportunity, and have made his job impossible. And we see it time and time again. The latest example is on the effort to defund Planned Parenthood. They don't have the votes to do that in the Senate, but they want to shut down the government to make a point.
All right, so they're on a fool's errand. They're a ship of fools.
The last time we shut down the government was on the Affordable Care Act, 13 days, if I remember right. It cost us $24 billion.
Didn't it? Didn't it save us $24 billion?
It cost us $24 billion with a B dollars, of which we derived absolutely no benefit.
All right. Well, is this a ship of fools? Are the conservatives, are the Tea Partiers a ship of fools? Are they sailing over the falls? Are they?
Here's what I think. I think that political promises get made in every election. So this last election, there were Republicans running for office who said, if you give us control of the Senate to go along with the control that we already have in the House, you can have whatever you want. You can have a pony for in every you can have whatever you want if you just and that was never the case. That was never the political reality. You have to have 60 votes in the Senate to have a real majority. And people do not understand that. And so they lash out at Boehner. They lash out at McConnell. But the fact is, it doesn't matter who your leader is. You don't have the votes.
Is it possible that neither one of these guys really represented the GOP en masse? The number of people that were dissatisfied with the GOP and the Senate and House leadership is like 92%.
Yeah, I think they have unrealistic expectations. So now we'll get probably Kevin McCarthy. It doesn't matter. You can put Louie Gohmert in there. You could put Steve King. You could put the most conservative person that you. The fact is, the House doesn't have a filibuster rule, so they can pass anything they want, which is why under John Boehner's leadership, they passed more than 50 bills to get rid of the Affordable Care Act.
Will you consider yourself a Boehnerite?
No, I think he had an impossible job. I think he did a poor job at the very beginning, and that set up these false expectations that people had. But he and Mitch McConnell both have an impossible job because people want them to deliver on things that they do not have
the votes
to deliver.
So isn't Mitch McConnell going to be driven out?
No. Did you see the vote on Planned Parenthood?
No,
the first vote, they didn't even have the majority. I mean, not put away the 60, they didn't have 50 votes. So they're going to get rid of him because he is in agreement with the majority of. No, of course not. And there are people within the Senate who have Ted Cruz would get rid of him in a minute. But Ted Cruz is running for president. Ted Cruz is always going to be running for something, and he's always going to be looking out for Ted Cruz.
Oh, well, how about more senators and congressmen coming in as GOP members?
That is what it's going to take.
Is it going to happen? We got a phone call here. We'll get Walt's opinion in just a second. We're almost out of time. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. You got 10 seconds.
Yeah, remind Walt that the Democrats passed Obamacare with 51 votes. That 60-vote rule isn't in the Constitution.
It is not in the Constitution. It was, been there since 1919. So
that's correct.
Brilliant point. Thanks for the call. All right. So are we going to get more GOP members in the Congress?
I think you're going to get less.
Why?
Because people don't like this stuff. People don't like this brinksmanship, lurching from one manufactured crisis to another. The next one's going to come on the debt ceiling. All we've done on Planned Parenthood is kick that off to December 11th.
But people are dissatisfied with the current leadership.
I think that's true, but I don't think listen, there are people on the right who absolutely are seeing this as, well, the problem is that we didn't shut down the government long enough. The problem is that we caved in. I don't think that's the majority view in the country.
All right. So can't majority? I mean, nothing is ever done by pure democracy. There's always somebody driving an interest group or a set of ideals. So anyway, thanks for coming on the show today.
The other thing, just quickly, the Senate is different in the House in that a lot depends on who is up in any particular election. Mm-hmm. And the next election isn't going to be a good one for the Republicans just based on which seats come up.
Folks, we're going to find out if Walt's prophecies, his secular prophecies, are going to come to. Thanks for coming on, Walt.
As always.
Enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And folks, have a great day. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, KOBE. We'll catch up with you in 22 hours. Ciao.